This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06. You are with Kelvin and Hezril on the evening edition. First up, we're looking at ideas to improve pensions in a country. So the World Bank suggests Malaysia create a non-contributory social pension for those aged 65 and above in the B40 group. According to their report called the Malaysian Economic Monitor, these groups are extremely vulnerable and don't have enough savings for their retirement.
Right, and there are a few reasons for this. Firstly, EPF contributions are employment-based, so many are left out, like housewives and those without fixed employment, for example. And for those in the gig economy who don't have company contributions, they don't make enough to make voluntary ones. Additionally, existing social protections like the government's Bantuan Orang Tua only reaches 26.4% of the elderly in the bottom 20%.
All of this has dire impacts for the B40. Many can't enjoy proper retirement as they need to continue working well after 60, especially if they don't have family support, and others may still have loans to repay. So they're eating into their savings, which could otherwise be used for basic things like food, utility bills, and so on.
Yeah, so to fix this problem, EPF strategy officer Nur Hisham Hussein says that Malaysia needs to explore a new social contract. For starters, he suggests that everyone be given an EPF account from birth to ensure that government aid reaches everyone who needs it. And the World Bank also proposes a social pension program of 350 ringgit cash aid per month for those aged 65 and above in the B40.
Yeah, and I think this is a developing conversation, right? Because we've known for some time now that we just don't save enough. And this also extends to the amount for our retirement. And it's going to be a much worse problem moving forward. Especially right now, I think for young people who don't necessarily have jobs or are in between jobs, or they are, you know, just not in any sort of formal employment, which is to that point about how now EPF is currently managed in a way where it's employment linked. So your employer contributes a bit and you contribute a bit each month to it. So if you don't have a job, you're getting a much later start to that retirement savings, which could prove detrimental in the long term.
Right. And I think if everyone does have an EPF account from the start, then they, regardless of whether they have they're permanently employed with a company or individually employed, then there perhaps could be some sort of policy where people are required to put in money into their EPF so that they're forced to invest in savings. But I also think that while I think the social pension, the modest social pension program of cash aid is a good start, I also think that other structural changes also need to be implemented alongside this, right? Because when, according to EPF statistics, 50% of EPF members above 55 finish their savings in 5 years. So by the time they're 60, there's no savings left. And I wonder what they're spending on, right? If it's loans, if it's healthcare, then perhaps there needs to be some sort of enhanced healthcare system where, especially for seniors in the B40 specifically, that all of it is free, right? It's all universal healthcare for them. And that it's interesting to, I think, also address both the retirement period and the pre-retirement period in this issue.
Yeah, which is where I think wages come into the picture, right? We simply don't earn enough. Many of us, I think, don't even really have that amount to last maybe 3 months, if that, or even just 1 month, right? You know, there was something going on Twitter for a bit about how so many people just don't even have 1,000 ringgit in savings. And that's particularly worrying, right? And that is absolutely not about how much you spend. You know, you're not spending necessarily on things that are frivolous. It's just that your wage hasn't kept up necessarily with cost of living. And you know, we go into education, tertiary education, which now for many people, they end up taking loans. They have to repay that, which eats into whatever they can spend and whatever they can save. Food has become more expensive. If you live in a place where public transport isn't great, you end up having to spend a lot more on transportation, be it a car or you end up taking, a taxi or something.
Right. I was just about to touch on public transport because at the end of the day, all of these things end up and connectivity is a big part of it. And when you consider, you know, just imagining our elderly suffering to go long distances without convenient forms of transportation, whether the buses aren't on time or they're not consistent, it's just a bleak picture. And I think that those things seriously need to be looked at, you know, alongside each other and in concurrence. Again, I think it goes back to what we were saying this week about a different topic. I'm trying to remember. I think it was something to do with foreign workers not being banned in the country. And I think I said that, you know, it's not a one policy situation. There are many aspects of it. It's all a big jigsaw puzzle, and it needs to be solved at the same time.
You can let us know, is reviewing our pension and retirement schemes the solution to having enough money to retire? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. On Twitter, we have that exact question running as a poll with almost 60% of 180 votes saying that we just need higher salaries and another 33% saying yes. The solution to being able to retire is reviewing the retirement and pension scheme systems. You can also you can keep those thoughts coming. After this, we will be speaking with Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:15 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezriel, and we're looking at proposals to improve pensions in our country, one of which comes directly from EPF, which is perhaps to have everyone be given an EPF account from birth to ensure that government aid reaches everyone who needs it. You can continue sending in your thoughts. In the meantime, though, we're crossing over to Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute, for his take on the issue. Chris, thanks so much for joining us this evening. Do you think a state-funded, non-contributory social pension scheme is feasible? And is that what we need from your point of view?
So I think the idea of a broadly targeted social pension is, to me, a very welcome idea, and it's pivotal. And I think it's something that I think it's a conversation that we need to have as a nation. And I think the World Bank has also introduced this idea as part of this spirit of what they call progressive universalism, in that the proposal is just a start, and they think that we should continue to extend the coverage and adequacy of the social pension over time when fiscal space allows. So I think in principle, this is something that I think is positive, and I think that's good. But perhaps where I think we can have some debate about the social pension is in the details, in terms of some of the proposals on how this can be implemented. And I think it is in this aspect that I want to sort of give some considerations. And I think the first one is that the proposal is that we continue to link this to the Bantuan Sara Hidup, PSH, or the BRIM database, which means that we will we're still using the B40 income group as our basis for targeting, which our research has shown that actually the B40 demarcation has a lot of problems. In fact, based on our own research, after we sort of do the kind of refinement on the household income calculations and all that, it shows that actually 70% of the Malaysian households has actually very similar standards of living. And therefore, I think the issue of inadequate retirement savings for me actually affects a broader group of individuals that goes beyond the B40 household income group. And I think second consideration is that this demographic transition that we talk about, and in terms of how it affects the elderly, actually affects a broader set of family life, you know, from affecting women in terms of how they enter the workforce and the care for young children and so on. So I think for me, the alternative here in terms of how we can configure or design this social pension is whether we can think a bit more radically or boldly about having a more comprehensive family benefit package instead, you know, one that can combine elements of social pension, child benefits, care allowance, and all that are designed in tandem instead of being introduced as separate programs. And I think it is in this sort of spirit that I think we can sort of tap into the BSH and to see whether we can even revamp the BSH to focus on family issues instead of, say, pegging the BSH to a cost of living issue. which to me has to be dealt with using other mechanisms other than cash transfers.
Right. And according to the World Bank, more than half of working Malaysians have EPF balances of less than 150,000 ringgit. What do you think are the shortcomings of our retirement scheme?
Yeah, so I think that the shortcomings to the fact that Malaysians do not have enough retirement savings have got less to do with the design of the Provident Fund itself. But I think that there are two main factors at play. I think the first one is that people have low wages generally. And I think this leads back to the whole question about the structure of our economy, where we are still doing a lot of low value added and low wage type of production. And I think the second one is the changing nature of work, where we have seen actually increasing number of Malaysians have actually pick up like more non-standard and informal forms of employment. And this includes things like self-employment, informal workers, contract work, and so on. And our own estimation actually is that about 2.8 million individuals in Malaysia are actually self-employed workers. And so the question is whether the current retirement schemes that we have can evolve along the kind of changing workforce that we see. And whether some of the incentives or some of these new proposals that are put in place in terms of incentivizing voluntary contributions and all that will be adequate or not, or do we actually need something more than that?
Do we need better targeting measures to ensure that social protections reach those who are not formally employed? As you said, for example, housewives or people in the informal sector?
So I think in the short term, there are definitely some databases that we can tap on, you know, to reach out to these groups that are not in your former employment. Like, for example, housewives, we used to have something called the ISUI, which are targeted at housewives. I don't have the numbers in terms of how many housewives have actually registered with the program, but we definitely have a mechanism like that. And in terms of, say, self-employment, SOCSO has a self-employment social security scheme, which is targeted at self-employed workers in terms of employment injury and all that. So I think in the short term, we definitely have some existing mechanisms where we can identify, you know, where the workers are and how we can channel the assistance to them. But I think in the long term, we should think about having something more universal in nature in terms of, say, having a universal tax record or tax file for everyone. So that we can set up something more comprehensive in terms of how we can reach out to all Malaysians. And I think this was, I'm not sure whether it's highlighted in the report of the World Bank or whether this was part of the panel discussion, where I think it was pointed out that we need something like a universal EPF file, SOCSO file, and tax file from birth. And I think these are some of the ideas that we should give more serious considerations to moving forward.
So, with these ideas in mind, in the long term, what would implementing something like this mean for youths today who can't get jobs due to the pandemic? Because they'll only begin to contribute to EPF much later in their lives.
Yeah, so I think people tend to like to see this as a trade-off, you know, in terms of the elderly versus the youth. And like, if we were to spend or we have additional allocation for the elderly, means that we will have lower amount of allocation for the youth. And to some extent, sometimes this could be true. But I think also we need to think about fiscal space here in terms of something that can be generated, whether through, you know, tax revenues, additional tax revenues, or whether it's from or debt or whatnot. So which is why I personally prefer to think in terms of a family benefit, looking at this in terms of different demographic segments, in terms of how we, you know, tailor the programs. And I think second, I think we need to sort of, I mean, this question of youth, we need to sort of move away from thinking that there is, say, a fixed number of jobs. And therefore, if we were to, you know, extend the retirement age for the elderly, means that there will be fewer jobs for the youth. So actually, we do have the capacity to generate enough jobs for everyone. And this is actually a policy choice that the government can make. And I think the Penjana package has actually started some initiatives in terms of catalyzing investments as well as creating new jobs. But where I was hoping that there could be some improvements is in terms of how some of these interventions can be more targeted at more strategic sectors like high-tech manufacturing or modern services, which to me, I think, will benefit the youth more in this aspect.
Right. And EPF Chief Strategy Officer Nur Hisham Hussein talked about the need to consult the people instead of just imposing an idea from the top. What is the role of public consultation in coming up with social protection systems that are effective?
Yeah, so I think public consultation is definitely quite key, you know, in terms of, I mean, we need buy-in for some of these proposals from the people, and especially when it comes to things like social protection, which, you know, quite directly affect the lives of everyday Malaysians. I think having a broader public discourse about some of these ideas are actually quite good. You know, for example, I think one of the proposals in the World Bank's report is about introducing a mandatory face withdrawal of the EPF, which means that you, when you reach retirement age, you cannot, you know, withdraw the entire savings in a lump sum, but it is in phase, to ensure that there's a bit more sustainability to how the retirement savings is used. And I think this proposal has actually been introduced way back in the 90s as well, in different forms, and it has not been very popular at the time. And I think that even the uptake of some of these some of these proposals have been quite low. So I think, but now with changing demographics and this whole question about inadequate retirement savings have become more pressing, I think having another round of public consultation about some of this and what are the trade-offs that we need to make if we were to move towards this kind of direction is quite key. And I think this extends to a whole range of policy options that are put forward as well on social protection.
So what form might this public consultation take?
Well, I think the public consultation itself, I mean, it can be even through, with the pandemic now, of course, it gets a bit tricky, you know, in terms of physical meetings and all that, but it could be like public webinars, that can be like written articles, research papers and whatnot that people exchange, you know, in any forms of public domain, so the exchange of ideas and even getting direct feedback to solicit public views on some of this could be also quite crucial.
And given that it's such a huge task ahead trying to reform and review our social protection systems, where do we start?
Well, I think actually the review process has been ongoing because in Malaysia we do have the MySPC, which is the My Social Protection Council, which I think has been mandated to coordinate some of this. And I know the discussions have been going on for years. But I think where perhaps we need to move next is actually to go down to the details of some of these proposals and to discuss some of these in terms of the fiscal implications, in terms of, say, the ringgit and cents of some of this. You know, I mean, every proposal, for example, will incur some costs. And the question is whether this is going to be funded through additional tax revenue or whether it's going to be reallocation from existing programs, or are we going to streamline or consolidate some other, you know, social protection programs or phase out some other programs in order to fund a new program. So I think going down to the details of some of these in terms of how we review and put forward some of these in a more systematic manner should be the way we should move for the next few years.
Right. And finally, you pointed this out earlier, but the root of the problem here seems to be that Malaysians don't get paid enough. Wages haven't been rising in tandem with cost of living. And at the end of it, the solution to this problem seems to directly come out from the government's pockets. Can or should the government then push for higher wages?
So I think as a protection mechanism, the government can push for higher minimum wage because that is legislative. And I mean, we can push it, say, closer to this idea of or this concept of a living wage. I think both Bank Negara and EPF have done some work on this and they have some numbers as to what constitute a living wage. But I think to deal with the question of low wages at its roots, I think the government has to deal with this not in terms of cash transfers, but actually to actually look into the structure of our economy, as I said, because it is still very much or predominantly low wage, low value added type of production. That means the kind of investments that we're attracting, the kind of capital investments that we put in place have not actually resulted in more high-skilled jobs for our people. And for me, actually, the pandemic now actually provides us a very good opportunity because of the, you know, reconfiguration of global supply chains and so on, for us to actually push through some of these structural reforms for the country, so as to move our workers actually more towards high-skilled jobs, as opposed to, you know, encouraging them to take low-skilled jobs. And I think that could be a more structural and long-term way of actually addressing the low-wage question.
Chris, thanks so much for speaking with us today. That was Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at Kasana Research Institute. You can let us know how you think our pensions system can be improved. You can send in your ideas to us, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio, where we have a poll running asking, is reviewing our pension and retirement schemes the solution? Almost 60% of 211 votes are saying that we just need higher salaries, with the other 34% saying yes, that it is the solution. Keep your thoughts coming. We are headed to the 6:30 news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.